Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life, this time making your life with an animal the best it can be. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. Our show's vet, Dr. Todd Friedland of Wyndham, Connecticut, is back, and I can't wait to get his reaction to some products on the market to keep your animal occupied, safe, fit, and more. Who knows? Maybe there'll be a robot programmed with your voice dispensing words of love and treats while you're away at work or on vacation. Inventors, you know where to reach me. You're invited to ask questions, as always, and we'll cover as much as possible right now on our website. You'll find links to some of the products that we've been reading about online. Todd, great as always to have you back with us.
Oh, it's great to be here.
You've been seeing cases. It has been very cold, and you've been seeing cases of frostbite.
Oh, absolutely. Frostbite of pads, feet and ears. And for me, most of the ones that I've seen are pets in these very, 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 very cold. We don't have to tell everybody how cold it is. All you have to do is go outside, and pets are being left outside. Now, it's fine if you leave your pet outside when it's 30 degrees, but when it's 0 degrees and the ground is as cold as the air is, or colder. I'm not really a geologist, so I don't know, but we're getting pets come in, cats and dogs, that are just left outside like they are the rest of the year for just too long. And it does bother me. I don't like to get critical, but common sense is a really good thing to have.
Oh yeah, that's suffering. That's not a good.
Yeah,
that's cruel. So
yeah.
What happens if a dog or a cat gets frostbite?
Well, the pads on the feet are they're very protective. So that's a thick kind of fibrous coating on the pads, but underneath that is fat, nerves, blood vessels, all these things that you need to have, and that outer layer will freeze and it will die. So then it peels off like a blister would peel off and leave that rawness.
And does it grow back?
Oh, it comes right back. It comes back. But imagine that the animals, first of all, they have to walk on all 4 feet. I mean, unless it's really, really bad, they're going to walk on 3. But which 3 are they going to walk on? Because it's all 4 feet that are affected. So, it hurts them. And so it's just one of these things. They get better. They don't get infected. It's not an antibiotic thing. It's just mostly what we do is bandage.
I have a person I know, Mr. Giuliano, who lives near Waterbury, and he is a very inventive man. And he saw that his daughter had this outside cat who just loved it. It was wild, and she kind of just started to take care of it, and suddenly it was living at the house. And he thought to himself, when it was super cold, there's got to be something I can do for this cat if the cat wants some kind of shelter. So he made just a little square box for the cat in the wintertime with an ordinary light bulb in it. And that light bulb was enough heat to keep that cat comfortable.
Oh, absolutely.
Just sheltered from the freezing cold. So it could be that simple.
Oh, that simple. I just got a call from an anesthesiologist. His wife was a pediatric dentist, and she passed away recently from cancer. But she had for her 3 outdoor cats, she had a Taj Mahal shed built with baseboard radiation and all of these things. And this just isn't this gentleman's cup of tea. And he called me and he said, look, I've got this house, which I've seen. I mean, I would live there. And all you'd have to do is, instead of the boards that are on the benches, I'd just put a little cushion. I'd be fine. And so he said, can I not – I have electric baseboard heat, and this thing is insulated, but it's still out in the middle of the yard. Can I shut the heat off? And I said, sure you can. I mean, these cats have, without even the electric bulb, they have protection. Here's the bottom line. Protection from the wind, protection from moisture, and to have fresh water. Now, at the risk of me getting more hate mail than I've already gotten from things I've said on this show pertaining to my cats, I have 3 cats that live only outside. They come in the garage. They can get into my garage. And then we have 3 cat carriers, the standard plastic cat carriers, with padding on the bottom. They're up against the wall, and there's an electric heating pad in each one. So now all the fire safety people are going to hate me, but at 10 or 11 o'clock at night, the timer goes on, and these cats have a nice little warm pad to sleep on. It goes off at 6 in the morning. I'll tell you, I would die and come back as one of these cats.
Okay.
So all you have to do is
people don't understand
you
that.
Protect them. Now, let's pretend that you can't. The cats will find cats that are fed properly, because those are the ones that live. The ones that eat are the ones that live. So your cat and my cat doesn't have to worry about competing for food. They get cat food. So if you feed them properly during the winter, you don't really, they'll find a place that's sheltered.
Here's a question that you just mentioned. If cats are eating in the wild, mm-hmm. when they're out running around during the day, I know they sleep a lot during the day, but they're out, they're doing some hunting, or maybe they're out at night. Why do we have to feed them additionally?
We don't have to.
Would they catch enough to absolutely.
The ones that didn't would die. That's what's been going on for tens of thousands of years. So, in my yard where I feed the birds, there's all kinds of varmints that eat bird seeds. So my cats, despite the food that I feed them, are still killing things all the time. You know, they're still hunting and moles, and I don't know how a mole gets through the ground when it's like this, but moles, chipmunks.
This is good for another 25 letters.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I do. I actually get mail that says, how could you possibly have a cat live outside in this weather? My cats are kings. They are kings, I have to tell you.
This bird thing is going to get you in a lot of trouble.
I know it is.
Okay, so you said there's a dog flu going around.
Yes, and this is very interesting because there's a new variant of a virus that causes a flu. Now, let's define flu as it's a respiratory disease. The good news about it, if there is such a thing, is that it started out in the Midwest. I mean, just taking out dogs. I mean, it was just a very virulent virus, and it looks like the cold that we're going to talk about in a minute that dogs get until about the third or fourth day, and then it just turns into a very virulent pneumonia, and dogs die. And they can be saved, but they do die, especially if they don't get the adequate care right away. So this started out with a great big alert through the whole country, and watch out for this flu, and it's spreading like wildfire in the Midwest. And a vaccine was prepared for it, so we bought a dozen vaccines, thinking, okay, well, let's see what happens. And then we got a letter from our state association that there was a case confirmed in New London. So our practice, we sent out all these letters to people saying this is what's happening, and with people traveling in kennels and all this, we thought it was a good idea to vaccinate. And so we started vaccinating, didn't hear another word. Then we heard about an outbreak here in New Haven, and then we haven't heard, that was a year ago, and we haven't heard another word about this virus here on the East Coast. It's a big mystery because it will take a couple of years to sort this out. But bottom line is, for the dog owners like you and me, we need to if our dog is not a backyard dog and it goes to the kennel or it goes to daycare or it goes wherever it goes where there might be exposure to a lot of other dogs, then my recommendation is to vaccinate for the flu, and that's a vaccine every veterinarian carries. But why it went nuts in the Midwest, we don't have any idea at this point.
So without symptoms, vaccinate. So
would be to protect in advance.
Yes. Right. So how would you recognize that your dog has
okay.
the
so
flu?
Let's say you bring me a dog in that's got a little fever and a cough. All right. I might diagnose that as what we commonly call in dogs kennel cough. It's a cold. Kennel cough is not – it's a big deal emotionally, but it's a cold. You know, and most animals will just get better if you can stand the cough for 5 days. But your dog with kennel cough will come in and present with a throaty cough, like a goose honking cough, maybe a little fever, maybe not, maybe feeling a little off, maybe not. So will the dog with the flu, just like that. But your dog with kennel cough will get, in 3 days, will be better. The dog with the flu will take a dive for the worst. They'll just go downhill extremely fast on about the third or fourth day of the disease. Mm. So the issue is communication. If your veterinarian knows about it, animal comes in the hospital, which presents its own set of problems if it is as contagious as people say it is.
Wow.
But it comes in the hospital, goes on intravenous fluids and high doses of antibiotics and supportive care, and they will live. You know, it's a bad case of the flu. And people die of the flu, but they really die of the complications.
So can humans pass a flu or a cold to a dog or a cat and vice versa?
Great, great question. And as a rule, the answer is absolutely no, because viruses tend to be what's called species specific. So there's an AIDS virus in cats. If that was contagious to people, I'd be a roofer. I'd be even on a cold day, I wouldn't be doing this. But most of the terms that we use are descriptive terms of the symptoms, not really the cause of the disease. And it's confusing because when I bring out a term like AIDS in a cat, they turn white. Until I have to say real fast, this is not AIDS in people. The word AIDS means acquired immune deficiency syndrome. That's what it is in cats. Leukemia is a picture you see on a blood slide. It has nothing to do with leukemia in people, but the blood slide looks the same.
Why is leukemia seems so prevalent in cats? I hear
well,
about
it's much
so
better
many...
than it used to be because we have an incredibly efficacious vaccine for it right now. We were just talking about this in my office. We used to see leukemia, and I'll tell you why, but it's because it's viral. That's why it's contagious, whereas in people it's not contagious. So, and the stray cats are just everywhere, and that's how it happens. So, but we see much less of it now than we used to, but it's still a big fear. I mean, we're seeing 1 or 2% positive on kittens that we test, but used to be 30 or 40%.
Wow!
Before the vaccine came out, that's a vaccine every cat needs, unless it's an indoor cat. As long as you don't drive home one day, see that kitten on the side of the road, feel sorry for it, bring it home to your house where your cats are not vaccinated. Because I've seen whole households of cats wiped out by this virus by somebody trying to do something good for the kitten that was on the side of the road. Doesn't mean you can't rescue the kitten. Don't anybody get me wrong. You just don't bring it in your house until you get it checked out.
Till you get the kitten checked out.
Get the kitten checked out. Make sure it doesn't have anything that's going to affect your own cats. But if you have a totally indoor cat with no exposure, you don't need to vaccinate for leukemia.
Okay. So I want to run – first of all, I want to say – I understand your mother's listening in Florida.
Go ahead. Say it.
Frida Friedland. And so I wanted to say hello and
– Hi, Mom.
You've raised a great son is what I want to say. Okay. So we're with Todd Friedland, who is our vet on the show. He is from North Windham, Connecticut, still practicing and always has great stories to tell. So we found a whole bunch of products and I want to run some of these by you because it's pretty interesting.
Well, I think I went in the wrong business. I mean, I'm taking care of sick animals and working really hard. And I know some of the things you're going to show me are a surprise and some I know. These people invent these things and they put them on TV and they're millionaires.
Well, I know. Yeah. Well, how about my robot idea?
Yeah.
Speaking
of robots, I have to say this. Did you watch the Grammys last night?
For 10 minutes.
Did you see who won all these awards?
Yes.
Some group with two guys that wear robot outfits?
Yeah.
Where have I been?
Oh, we know that.
Yeah, okay. Like,
okay, so there's a thing called Whistle, which is a stainless steel tag that is embedded with an accelerometer, and it registers your dog's every mood and then feeds you every move. And then it feeds you the data on your smartphone app. It's about $100. It goes on the collar of the dog. And so you can see whether the dog is sleeping, chasing, doing whatever it's doing. And I thought to myself, really? You have to – I mean,
well, this replaces the nanny cam is what it does.
Well, they said the point of this is that if you see your dog exhibiting unusual behavior by glancing at that app – or you just want to know the dog's running around and you want to know the dog's okay.
Let's be clear. You're glancing at the app, not the dog.
Exactly. That's next. That's my next
right,
invention.
Okay.
Okay, so that's kind of interesting.
Well, this is
interesting. These are on our site, by the way, WNPR.org.
Yeah, because this little gadget, you know, people – we deal all the time with behavior problems with animals that are home alone all day because most people think that their dogs sleep all day when they're away at work, and they don't. They wake up, they're curious, they go here, they go there, they get stressed, they hear a loud noise, then they're scared of loud noises because there's no security for them with nobody home. So this could be, if used properly, a good tool for the dog with behavior issues that's left home all day.
And I know phone companies have these cameras that you can put in the house.
Right.
So if your dog is in a single room, you could accomplish the same thing.
Right.
But it doesn't take all this data and whatnot. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to get to, believe it or not, a dog treadmill. So
oh, absolutely.
I've got that one. All right. We'll be right back with Dr. Todd Friedland and your calls. Thank you. I'm Faith Middleton. You can find what we talk about on the show online anytime at WNPR.org, including a lot of these pet products that we have found recently. Just thought they were interesting. Certainly not an endorsement, but if you want to find out more about any of these things we're talking about, we put the links online at our show website, WNPR.org. Click on programs for the Faith Middleton Show. Okay. And at that site, you will find delicious recipes for dinner, value wines, easy cocktails, and you just click on programs at WNPR.org for the Faith Middleton Show. Excuse me, I'm so sorry. It's that season. Okay, here we go. Todd, tell me about this. I'm going to get to the treadmill in a minute, but there's something called the pet tracker. It's the official name of this thing is Tag. I found some of these in the New York Times, by the way, and I'm reading from that. This was initially started, as you know, to help owners find lost pets. And so it's been around for more than a decade. Well, now there's this new thing, which is Passport Pet Access Smart System, which has been made a part of this. So the pet door that dogs and cats go in and out of, it can be programmed so that up to 20 animals. So if you have multiple animals, and they all, you want them to be able to go in and out at different times, you could program this thing, and it senses I guess they wear a collar thing. And
they wear a collar, yeah. And you also, this same gentleman that called me about his Taj Mahal that he wanted to, you know, not heat anymore, called me about a year ago. He said, every cat in the neighborhood is coming into my cat's shed. I mean, the shed, I have to tell you, like I said, I would live there. He said, now I got every cat in the neighborhood. How do I stop that? Because I have to feed them all now. And I said, you get this little radio-controlled collar and a door, and only your cat can go in and out. And you can tell the door when to let your cat in and out. So this
but,
is just...
But here's the problem with that. Yeah. You know, most of the time, the other cat, the stranger cat, is chasing your cat. So your cat heads straight for the door. The door opens to let your cat in, and the chasing cat goes right in behind. Isn't that?
Well, this cured this guy's problem.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
Just totally took care of his problem.
Okay, so I guess we've been tweeted. And it's your son.
Now, hey, Russ.
Now it's your son, Russell. Russell, hello.
He's in Las Vegas.
He's in Las Vegas. Yep. So Russell.
Okay. So we got them all covered.
Okay, good. So there's this thing created by Pet Zen, also at our website. And this is a treadmill for dogs. Mm-hmm. And the idea is it's been used by show dog owners for a long time. I don't know why. To keep them what? Trim?
Yes, that's exactly why. And entertained and, from being bored. It's also used therapeutically, because I can tell you a story about Sophie. And
$500 to $1,000.
Yeah.
That's... Demand has doubled in the past year for these things. What happened to walking?
Faith's eyes are as big as saucers, and I'm not surprised at any of this because of the stuff I hear. That is what's happened to walking? The answer is, it's easier to put your dog on a treadmill than to get dressed and go out for a walk. It's all about a fostering laziness in my eyes. But it's a gimmick. It's just another gimmick, and some people have to have this.
Well,
that's really
I certainly don't want to go out in a vicious snow or rainstorm with a dog. And, you know, I sympathize.
Well, this is an offshoot.
But really?
This is an offshoot of a therapeutic mechanism of underwater treadmills for dogs to exercise. There's actually two physical therapy hospitals in Connecticut, and they use the underwater treadmill. And I can tell you a story about Sophie. It's an amazing story. But Sophie is a Wheaton Terrier that I take care of. That is, I think Sophie's like 16 or 17 years old, and just out of normal aging, just kind of breaking down, a little arthritis, a little tendonitis, you know, this and that. So these people take their dog to this center outside of Hartford for underwater treadmill physical therapy. Mm. Well, in about 4 months, This dog now walks down the hallway in my hospital with a bounce to her step because she has muscles now that were deteriorating from the underwater treadmill. And then, you know, it doesn't take much to say, underwater treadmill's too expensive and it's a big deal, but let's just do a treadmill. And if you can get your dog to be on the treadmill, you've got yourself a gimmick.
Hey, okay, so yeah. I love that there's, I mean, it's certainly for people with, humans with injuries, this water therapy is astonishingly useful, and so I'm glad to hear this.
Well, I got a tour of the football training facility at UConn. It's huge. It's huge. It's named after two guys, donated a lot of money, and if you go into their physical therapy section, the trainers were telling us that if they can do this therapy in the water, in the pools, and it's hot water and warm water, and they have all these pools, they can cut the recovery time in half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I did. Yeah. I did it myself. Yeah. When I was in a car accident a long, long time ago, and they prescribed this water therapy, and it was miraculous.
Yeah, I mean,
it's something.
You're moving against water, but you're moving.
Yeah, so, yeah. They put a, you know, fins and a snorkel mask on you, and off you go. Yeah. Okay, so there are all these feeders now, and we have these posted too right now, where the cat has to do something to get the food out. And so they're trying to simulate what it would be like in the wild, I guess.
To
keep the cat's interest. So is this necessary?
Well, here's the thing. It's another gimmick, and some people like it. But the biggest disease that I treat is obesity. You know, cats get the food they want, not necessarily the food they need. There's a big difference between the two, just like in people. I wish I could eat all the food I wanted, but I don't. And so cats are laden with food, obesity, diabetes, heart disease, all of these things that go along with obesity. And this is not rocket science. This is you and me too. It's human medicine too. So we have been trying to have people do strange things to get their pets to move when they eat. So you feed in five different places in the house, or you scatter the food. Well, this is kind of a mechanized way to do it, and it's a way for people to make money. It's an infomercial waiting to happen, and people will buy it, and it will be good for the cats, actually.
Because
it will – well, many cats – again, back to these nanny cams, we know, especially with indoor cats, that they will make eating a part of their day just to break up boredom. So you can put a lot less food in a lot of more places and still entertain that cat, get that cat moving around a little bit, rather than what some of my clients say is, you know, my cat doesn't even bother to get up from the food bowl anymore. It just goes to sleep and gets up and eats and goes to sleep and gets up and eats. Mm. And I have several cats. You know, I can talk to you about Sparky, who weighs 31 pounds, who eats more food than my three cats who live outside. Because it makes the owner happy. So I think all of these things that would promote exercise have a place.
If you have a question for our vet, Dr. Todd Friedland, he's back on the show. Obviously, we'd love to hear from you at 203-776-9677. That's 203-776-WNPR. There are all kinds of devices now that are kind of shoot a laser beam, and you can program the laser beam while you're away to change its pattern, right? So that and cats love this thing.
And this is very controversial amongst the cat behaviorists and the dog behaviors. It's people's opinions is what it is, but there are some behaviorists that say that these cats never catch the laser. So just in and of itself, that creates behavior problems because they should be able to catch their prey. People have a lot of time in their hands, Faith. I mean, it's just, you know, this is what people think of and they write. People in academics have to write, and this is the kind of stuff that you read about, and some of it may have merit and some of it doesn't.
You mean, so it's frustrating?
Too frustrating for the cat because they never can catch the laser. So there's articles written about
it.
They look to me like they're having a blast, I'll tell you. But, you know, well, I guess the answer is one of my clients said what she does, because she happened to read about this controversy, is that she hides a toy under a chair or something, and then she does the laser thing, and then at the end she brings the laser to the toy, and her cat grabs that toy, and it's
well, that's smart.
Had a successful hunt.
That yes. is smart. Okay. Yep. There is a vest that is for dogs equipped with a speakers and a pocket where you put your iPod pouch. You know, mm-hmm. it's a pouch for your iPad thing. And then it plays music while the dog and you are walking in the park, but so that it gives the dog a little bit of
Well, you know, I wish people could see your face and my face because I have a series of CDs in my office sitting right next to my desk right now that was given to me by a client that says this is soothing music for mornings for dogs, soothing music for afternoons for cats, you know, like tea time for your cat, I guess. And I'm sounding very cynical because I am. I'm not sure. You know, first of all, which group of dogs said this is really soothing? You know, none of them did. So this is somebody, and it's on the market. You can buy this little packet of CDs so that any time of the day or night, you can play the appropriate soothing music or exciting music. It has that also. Yeah, you know, it's out there. People buy it, and as with a lot of these things. And some of it has merit. Some of it has merit. Have you seen the TV commercial with the little, there's a little mouse under a circular mat, and that mouse is on a motor, and it just goes around. It goes around to the right, then it goes around to the left, and the cat has to try to catch this mouse.
Well, there's one we have posted that is for dogs, and it's built in such a way that if they catch it, they won't destroy it. Because yeah. I think that was the problem.
Same
in the
thing
beginning.
With the cat one.
And right. it is one of these things that shoots all over the place, and the dog has a ball. You know, it's bored when you're right. off at work, and the right. apparently, I mean, so they.
Well, I think this is the purpose of a lot of them. Whether it's the original purpose of making them, I don't know, but they do serve a purpose. There's a cat thing that is three. It's clear plastic. It's three look flying saucer shaped containers, one on top of another. The food is in the top one. They have to bat at it, and the food kind of goes around like those marble games oh. and finds its way to the bottom where it comes out, and the cat can actually eat it.
Well, that sounds kind of fun.
Yeah, I think my cat would just sleep there until I came home and emptied it.
John, I'm with Dr. Todd Friedland. Welcome to the show.
Yes, am I on the air?
Yes, you are. Go ahead.
Hi, John.
Hey, I got a question about a dog. My dog, you know, I know the rules of walking your dog. You're supposed to keep him on the leash. He walks by your side or behind you. You sort of give him some rules to walk by. But this dog is so hyper and spastic that as soon as you make it like towards the door that you're going to leave to walk him, he's bouncing off the walls. You get him outside, and he's so hyper, he can't even decide which leg he wants to lift. So he alternates between his back legs while he's peeing because he's so excited, and he just.
What kind of terrier is this?
It's a schnoodle. Good guess.
Always listen. Couple things I can help you with. Number one is it's as much you as it is the dog. I hate to tell it to you that way, but it is. There are two leash-type apparatuses that might be helpful that will take a little bit of work on your part. One is the gentle leader. Gentle leader looks like a muzzle, but it's not. And it goes around but it's a strap that goes around the muzzle and under the neck. It comes with a video. It's called the 10-minute behavior fixer. Takes dogs about 10 minutes to get used to it. The theory is that the dog can't go anywhere that his nose can't go, and as long as you're controlling where his nose goes, he can only go straight ahead. Those work really well. Gentle leader. There's another one that comes multiple names that's actually kind of a harness apparatus that goes under the armpits. And then
and restricts their legs from walking.
Well, it doesn't restrict anything. They just, when you pull on the leash, it puts pressure on their armpits, and dogs don't like that, and they just sit down. Both of these are to be used as a training apparatus, not as an answer to your needs. It's part of training. So my suggestion is pick a behavior trainer, a behavior trainer, not just a dog lesson trainer. Get a behavior trainer and find out which one of these two they like to work with, and then you go for the lessons with the dog, obviously. But it's all about training us how to be a little bit hard sometimes, but to get these dogs under control, and I'll bet you can do it, even with a terrier.
So you're telling me that it's not an energy thing. He's not just
Oh, it is an energy thing. It is energy, but you've got to learn how to control it. And the dog has to learn that there's good things that happen when it behaves in certain ways. So let's say I was pulling on that one that goes under the arms, and the dog sat, instant treat. Instant treat. Good boy, good boy, good boy. And when he pulls, nothing bad happens. He just gets uncomfortable and sits down, and then he gets an instant treat. But the sitting down goes with a command, so that eventually the dog learns the command. It won't take you long. Get a good dog behaviorist and the apparatus that they like to work with, and you're going to be fine.
How do you know who's a good dog behaviorist?
I'm going to make an assumption that you use a veterinarian. Your veterinarian probably has some feedback and can get you wherever you live. Yeah.
All right, great. Thank you
call. Hey, call us back in 6 weeks. I'll be back. Let me know how it worked out.
I will.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye-bye. 203-776-9677. I was watching an Animal Planet show about cats and seeing all these very unusual breeds that I've never heard of. It's pretty exotic, some of them. And so I'm watching this, and then in one scene, a woman was walking one of these cats, because it's an indoor cat, would take it for a walk each day down the sidewalk with one of these leashes on that you're describing. It goes around the body,
not around the neck, the harness.
Exactly. And the cat was trotting along, sniffing, and didn't seem unhappy, restricted, wasn't yanking and pulling as if I can't believe I'm on this leash. Seemed perfectly normal.
Some dogs are fine. Some cats, I mean, are perfectly fine with a harness and walking like a dog. I'll tell you, when Pepper was alive, Pepper's my Shih Tzu that passed away about 2 months ago. When Mona would walk Pepper, my two gray cats that live outside that we talked about earlier in the show would walk right along with Pepper. So I have these two gray and white cats and a gray and white Shih Tzu walking up the street, dogs on a leash, cats are walking right alongside of them, people stopping going, what's going on here? These cats, I'm sure, would walk on a leash. And we had... I hear about it. I mean, I just hear about cats that go for walks on a leash, and it's safe. If you're going to walk with your cat in the road, you need to have some control.
I was going to say, there have to be situations where this is a good idea.
Yeah, plus, we're in the winter now with snow. This is when we see a lot of cats that are injured on the road. People need to be aware of this. The snow is piled up on the side of the road, so there's nowhere for the cats to go when the cars come. Because they're going to walk down the road. They're not going to walk in the middle of your yard. They're going to walk where there's no snow.
But here's my question. If you have an indoor cat and you take it for a walk outside, is there anything that's cruel about that? Because you're exposing the cat to the outside and then keeping it inside.
I think, again, we're going to go right back to the very first words we said in the show is common sense. If that cat goes out and comes back in and is shivering and shaking or whatever, licking its paws, and then it's not a comfortable experience for the cat.
I don't mean anxious. Yeah. I mean, does the cat then have longing to be outside?
That's a whole other story. When people say, I want to have an indoor cat when they bring me a kitten, I say, never bring this cat outside unless it's in a carrier. Never. Because there are some cats, they just have to get out once. And they don't ever want – it's very hard to keep an indoor cat. I mean, a cat that wants to go outdoors, indoors. They'll drive you nuts if they don't rip up your screens. So the answer to your question is, if the cats do get outside, there are many of them that say, okay, this is what I want.
I've got to tell you about Sophie and Grace, these two rescued cats, right after this break. We're going to take a short one and then be right back with Dr. Todd Friedland, our vet on the show.
Save my soul, chased a black cat for a pot of gold. Let me down here, now I'm losing my mind at the crossroads.
I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you listening to the show. I want to say thank you so much to our producers, Lori Mack and Jonathan McNichol, and of course to Dr. Todd Friedland of North Windham, Connecticut, where he is a practicing vet and comes on our show about every 6 weeks. Let's take a call, and then I'm going to tell you about Sophie and Grace, the rescued cats. Pam, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hi, Pam.
Hi. I have a very sweet Entlebucher Mountain Dog that just had double bilateral stifle surgery. So they replaced all the ligaments in her knees. So I'm very committed to her recovery, and I'm doing everything that the vets up at Cornell told me to do. But when you talked about physical therapy and getting her in the pool, I'm not sure if I'm really committed to bringing her. I have three children along with my beloved dog, and I'm not sure if I'm really committed to doing that. I want to work with a good therapist, but is that something that I could teach my children, that we could do the therapy with her at home?
Well, you have three kids and a dog recovering from surgery. What do you do in your spare time?
I'm about to go into Petco and buy a harness.
Okay, so how old are your kids?
8, 10, and 12.
Okay, so sure, you could probably, I've never done what I'm going to tell you to do, but I imagine you could, or you can call me at my office. I'll be in on Wednesday. But I'm pretty sure the guys that did the surgery or the surgeons that did the surgery could give you a physical therapy program. Because whenever I do a cruciate repair or something like that, or a hip surgery, we give out, after about the second or third week, depending on how the dog's progressing, we give out a physical therapy handout. And I think that one of my nurses who does that for my clients in my office got that right off the web. It's a pretty thorough step one until the dog masters step one and two, and then move on to three and four. Physical therapy will speed up recovery. There's no question in my mind. I'm pretty old, so I come from the era before physical therapy, before we even knew about physical therapy, that it would help at all. And dogs pretty much have only one direction to go, which is forward. They will pretty much, in my eyes, do their own physical therapy, but I have seen it speed up the recovery. There's another benefit. It's a ton of fun for you and the dog and the kids. So ask your surgeons. That's a pretty sophisticated surgery that was done. I'm sure they know about physical therapy.
Well, they were very – they said, oh, you have to get her in the pool and you have to bring
No, you don't have to do that, but go ask them for a physical therapy program and go for it, and it will benefit everybody in the family.
Good luck with that, Pam.
Yeah,
thank
good luck.
You.
Thank you so much. So Sophie and Grace are two cats were an hour from being euthanized, and friends of mine – went and got them and said, we're going to take them. And these are cats that look to be about 18 months old, and they had never been outside of a cage. And so I go over to the house as they're arriving. These two cats, who've only lived in a cage, brother and sister, were so remarkable. I thought, well, I just won't see the cats. They'll be under a bed somewhere. They were strolling around, jumping on things, looking, not a speck of anxiety, as if they had done this a million times. Went straight to the litter box, drank tons of water, ate a little food. I thought, how do they know how to do this? Well, what in the world? How is that possible?
Not every cat, but most cats have a trait that I wish I had called adaptability. Now, we're going to go the other way for a moment. My three outdoor cats, I'm going to be going away. I've got to catch them. I've got to bring them to the animal hospital. They're going to be in a cage. From the minute they're going to be in the cage, from outdoors, climbing trees, doing all the things they do, they're going to relax. They're going to find a place in their cage to nap. They're going to be what appears to be totally content. I mean, my staff, they do good out at night, and my staff lets them walk around. They could care less. I come back 2 weeks later. I put them in a crate. I bring them home. I put them out. They're instantly right back to what they were doing before. Cats can be very – that's one of their traits of and why they have nine lives. They're just totally – they can be totally adaptable to anything. My brother had two old cats, over 15, and his wife developed severe acute allergies after all these years. What am I going to do? Some people feel like all they could do is put these cats to sleep. I said, let them out. He lived in Denver. So cold, hot, let them out. So they huddled next to the screen door. He told me, call me for 2 days. He said, they're huddling next to the door. I feel so badly. I said, well, let the cats in. Your wife dies, or leave them outside. You know, that's if you don't, there was no place to put them. Third day, he calls me up. He goes, it looks like they've lived outside their whole life.
Interesting.
Yep.
Really?
And very shortly, they were catching, at old, they were catching mice and stuff around the yard.
So. You know, I go to somebody's house and there's either a new animal or someone who just loves this cat or dog beyond imagining. And so I think, well, it'll be kind of fun not just to bring a host gift, but to also bring a little something for the dog or the cat. And especially with dogs, this is a problem because you run into a couple different stores and what you find or see that seems the most you know,
right.
sensible, is rawhide. And so I've read in some places this is a good idea, this is not a good idea.
Well, this is an interesting thing. To answer
and
one question first.
What's a great gift if it's not that?
Let's answer that first. Yeah, and now we have, like, people that are concerned about wheat allergies and gluten for their dogs, most of which is unfounded. It does exist, but it's rare. But go with a healthy gift. Just if it's a dog, go with a healthy gift. So that means you're going to go over to the things that dogs chew on to clean their teeth that are flavored in flavors that either you like or the dog likes. There's peanut butter and bacon. There's all these really cute things that are in shape of bones, in the shape of mice. There's all. So if you are going somewhere, bring something for to occupy the dog. You're going to accomplish a lot of things. You know, you may help the dog's teeth a little bit, but you're going to that dog will befriend you for giving it a treat. So, you know, I don't know that you can bring a collar or a leash. And people have these things, but there's all these. The Greenies is one of them that's got chlorophyll, so it helps their breath for about 10 minutes, you know, that kind of stuff.
So these things are real?
Oh, yeah.
And they're not harmful?
Not harmful at all. No, not harmful at all.
They're just flavored.
They're just flavored things for dogs to chew on, which is a big issue in veterinary medicine, is tooth disease. Mm-hmm. So having anything that the dog will chew on is a great. So think about the healthy gifts.
Rawhide?
Okay, so rawhide. We were taught in school a long time ago, rawhide, no good. It's not digestible and all these things. And it comes in all kinds of sizes. Somebody did a study of – some veterinarians did a study with a fair number of dogs, and they took these dogs and they were trying to determine if rawhide helped clean dogs' teeth. And for 6 months, they fed this group of dogs all – they had two groups, one with no rawhide, one with rawhide. The one – they were beagles. The ones with rawhide, they fed them all the rawhide those dogs would possibly eat. They just kept pushing the rawhide in, and then the other dogs got no rawhide, and they were comparing teeth. In 6 months, with hundreds and hundreds of rawhides being chewed by this group of, I think it was 20 dogs, not one dog got constipation, diarrhea, vomiting, obstructive disease, not one. They couldn't determine at the end of the study whether it helped the teeth or not, but the conclusion was maybe rawhide's a little safer than we think it is. I have been practicing veterinary medicine for 42 years. I have taken all kinds of things out of dogs' intestines. And their windpipe, never a piece of rawhide. So it's my opinion that rawhide is safe. The issue with rawhide is where it comes from. There are countries that raise their livestock without disease prevention, and there are some things. There was a bad China group of pig's ears that came out and carried certain diseases. So if you can figure it out, you want your rawhide to come from the United States. Not easy to figure out because it's usually purchased in a big bin and nobody knows where it comes from.
Oh, okay. That's a job. But yes,
yeah.
Jeannie, Faith Middleton with Dr. Todd Friedland. Go ahead, Jeannie. Jeannie, are you there?
Jeannie, you there?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. The funny story. I had a cat. We called her Baby Kitty. We had six cats, two dogs, and Baby Kitty would not use the litter pan. She, even in this weather, up in New Milford, I'm in Waterbury now, she would not use litter pan, insisted in going outside to go to the bathroom. And she looked like the cat on the commercial with the crystal bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was beautiful. Come spring, she was mad at his help.
So do you still have her, or?
Oh, no.
Yeah. So let me tell you that some cats do not like to share litter boxes. Some cats do not like to use litter boxes for various reasons. Cats have something called surface preference. So that means that there's certain litters they will not use because of the texture. There are certain cats that don't like certain shapes of litter boxes. The cats can have a lot of kind of bizarre behavior, probably not
issues.
A lot of issues, maybe more than humans. So the thought behind cats and litter boxes is that you, the experts, whatever they know, are suggesting a minimum of one more litter box than you have cats. The cats need to, and the litter needs to be of various textures, so they don't all have the same litter, that they're impeccably clean, and that the shape of the litter boxes are different. You know what determined the shape of the standard litter box? This is astounding to me. It had nothing to do with cats. It had to do with what would fit well on a supermarket shelf. So there are cats that don't like that. So I don't know. We have cats that want round ones. They'll pee in a round one, but not in a square one with the same litter in it. So, you know, that kind of stuff. Uh-huh. So you can't find round litter boxes. They don't exist because they don't stack well or whatever they don't do. I don't know. If you go to an auto supply shop, the oil draining pans are often round or oval. But they're a little too high, so you have to sometimes cut them down. Older cats will stop losing the litter box because they have arthritis sometimes and they can't climb over. Mm-hmm. So you got to give them a little access. So litter box aversion is a major problem with cats. And there are some cats that will only go to the bathroom outside.
All right. Thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it very much. If you have a certain breed of dog, I'm told that this can sometimes affect your homeowner's insurance.
Absolutely.
So these insurance companies do feel that
this is going actually in a bad place. Right now there's a hit list. There's a dog hit list. And the obvious ones are on there. There's the Rottweiler and certainly the Pitbull's on there and the German Shepherd is on there and there's probably 15 or 20 other breeds that are on there. These are the ones that statistically, it's not true, but it's statistically from emergency room and doctor treatments, doctor visits, cause the most health problems, biting usually. And so the insurance companies have to pay out, whether it's your homeowners or whatever it is, and you have medical expenses that go with it. So the insurance companies will often call you. We got a call once and just ask you about the tile floors and, oh, by the way, do you have a dog? Well, what kind of dog? And I've had all kinds. We could do a whole show on this. Where this is going, and so some insurance companies will drop you. They'll actually have somebody knock at the door. Your dog will bark. They'll see what kind of dog you have, and you'll get a letter that there's no more insurance for you, and you have to go find some other insurance. There's now the DNA testing, which is not perfect yet, but we now have a couple companies that DNA test your dog to find out what breed they are made of, and I have a client that's looking right now to see what her mixed breed dog is because it matters to her. So what the insurance companies will do eventually when all the breeds are perfected, and this is going to be very problematic, is they're going to say, you want a dog? No problem. You have to get a DNA test. And then if your dog is more than one, let's arbitrarily say 1/16th pit bull, we will not insure you or you will pay this extra premium.
Well, you said it's not true.
Let me tell you, we had an experience with a dog that, look, you and I, if that dog was in here, would be a sheepdog. It looked like a pedigree sheepdog. Insurance company trouble, letters, pictures, nothing mattered. We sent out DNA. Came back with four breeds that are all under 10 pounds. This dog weighed 60 pounds. None of those dogs were in that mixed breed dog.
So much for the DNA test.
And if you, like many breeds that are here now, are really combinations of other dogs from thousands of generations ago, that's in the DNA. So you won't get a boxer DNA. You'll get DNA that's consistent with the breeds that the boxer was made from. And if one of those breeds is on a hit list, you lose.
Wow. I just wanted to point out that on January 12th, the Brantford Eagle reported that two Rottweilers, supposedly on that list, barked and woke their owners up because they sensed fire in the house and the house burned down. But everybody survived, including yet another caged animal in the house.
Yeah, these stories are phenomenal, and they're not uncommon.
Thank you so much
for being on
the show, and we'll see you in about a month. As always, this show is about the richness of life, and you can find the books, people, great recipes, value wines, and cocktails we feature right now at WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show, and you will see a link to all of our Food Schmooze recipes in the archive. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.